are back on Thanksgiving Eve, and we should give thanks because this is the only radio program this week that the fabulous Jim Mars is deigning to visit and share his wit and wisdom. Hello, Jimmy boy. How are you?
Howdy.
Howdy.
You know who you say that, right?
Yeah, I can't remember her name, though.
Minnie Pearl.
That's it, Minnie.
Minnie Pearl always had a hat on with a price tag hanging off of it.
She's
I know a little bit about everything.
You do. You're dangerous.
I know Pop and I know Mary Alonzo, and I know, you know, the Platters.
Thanks to me.
Yeah, well, no, man. You got to be kidding, man. If you were alive at the time of the Platters, everybody heard the Platters.
Everybody. And I'll bet you back then in the gym and before you were really
in the gym on Friday night when they had the sock hop.
Yeah, the last dance was lights low, and you got to kind of wave and wave back and forth. And yeah. they'd play the Platters.
And Johnny Mathis.
Oh, yeah.
Usually the last song was Johnny Mathis.
How can you lose with that?
Exactly.
Chances are you can't.
Well, that was back in the days of the old Republic.
The real Republic. Now, am I right or wrong? Arguably, the 1950s were probably the zenith of American culture. Western culture, people had homes, cars.
I would shift that up just a few years. I think in the 50s, things were really pretty stiff and formal, and everybody wore ties and suits.
That's right. Wingtips were still worn.
Yeah. I would move it up to about 1962, 63, 64, somewhere in there. You know,
so 54 to 64?
Yeah, there you go.
That works.
I think that would cover it.
Do you know I saw an ad for Wingtips?
Actually, the old Republic lasted officially until November the 22nd, 1963.
Well, then that makes sense. So we'll go 53 to 63.
There you go.
And when John Kennedy was taken from us, that was the coup d'etat, and that ended it.
That was the coup politically, and then just...
That's when they plugged in Tavistock and the Beatles and all that came in.
That's when they all rung. And then 2 months later in January, I think, of 64, is when they got us socially with the Beatles.
Correct. Absolutely.
And I don't want anybody to think that I'm...
No, we're not being prude here.
I'm not bad-mouthing the Beatles.
Like that.
But I got to admit, when they first came out, I saw them on Ed Sullivan and saw them, you know, heard some of their later music and stuff. I thought, hey, who are these British, clods that are imitating Chuck Berry, you know?
Which is exactly right.
But then they came out with Ringo's Theme and...
They were a talented group until idiot Yoko Ono put her nose in there and that...
Yeah.
There's no question that ended it.
Yeah, as soon as they came out with Norwegian Wood and Ringo's Theme, I thought, oh, wait a minute, these guys, they got something going. They got some talent.
Well, they did, and they did, and that was a very unusual blip on the radar of social phenomena.
That ushered in the, what do they call it, the British invasion, right?
Uh-huh.
They had all these rock groups out of Britain, and then everybody's imitating over here, and pretty soon everybody's wearing polka dots and letting their hair grow down to their butt, you know. And and then we were into the age of the hippies, you know, the late 60s. And the best part of that was that
Let's not talk about the best part of that.
No, the best part of that whole revolution was the anti-war movement.
I thought it was sex.
Well, hey, excuse me, that's been popular since the caveman.
Well, I don't remember that. Yeah, I'll defer to you on that.
I know, that's further back than you or I, either one go, but it was anti-war movement. And you know what, really, you look back and get objective about it, the anti-war movement pretty well shut down the Vietnam War. They really did.
It was an amazing expression of the will of the public, the populace,
exactly.
The people. Nothing like it since. Probably nothing like it again. Although I don't want to count that out because
until this past election,
yeah.
that was pretty much a slap in the face to the New World Order and to the pundits and the sanctimonious arrogant media moguls who, you know, who consider where we all live. Well, I don't know about you. You're in Washington. You're on the West Coast.
But, Oregon.
But here in Texas, see, we're known as a flyover state. You know, you just fly over it as you're going from New York to L.A., you know, or back, you know.
Now, that's just the west part of Texas.
No, no, it's all of it, man.
Is it?
Hey, just look at the map. Look at the blue states, northeast.
Well, I did.
Blue states on the west coast. And everything in between was red. So that's just the flyover.
That's the flyover.
Yeah, you just fly over those. You don't ever stop and go there. I mean, Cleveland, St. Louis, you know, Omaha, Cheyenne. You know, nobody goes there.
I went to Manhattan, Kansas, and I understand.
Well, okay, now I hope everybody understands that I'm being facetious.
Well,
okay?
I am, too. But it's something, it's not a big draw. It's a wonderful town. It's not a big draw. It's a flyover town. Right.
Exactly. Hey, I live in rural Texas. I'm as flyover as you can get. But what I'm saying is that's the attitude of these arrogant sons of guns on the East Coast and the West Coast. They think if something happens in middle America, it can't be worth anything, you know?
That's the truth.
You got to be in the Big Apple or you got to be in L.A., you know, where the action's going on. Hollywood.
Now, there's Hollywood. There's some ugly chicanery going on. Jill Stein has been appointed by the Soros Clinton campaign
to your listeners who Jill Stein is. May not know.
She was the Green Party candidate for president. She got 5% of the vote.
Yes.
Anyway,
Was probably put up there just to suck votes.
Of course she was.
Trump. You know.
Of course she was. She was trying to pick up some of the Bernie stuff and keep it away from Trump.
Yeah. Well, same way with the Libertarian Party. I voted Libertarian for, I don't know, 20 years, and then I looked at this guy.
And
he's talking about, oh, he's all in favor of mandatory adult vaccinations. I mean,
that's libertarian.
Where does liberty fit into that?
This guy was a phony.
He was. He was a put up, too. The whole thing was a fraud. Okay?
Yes.
From start to finish.
Yes.
And now I'm even worried about Trump. But let me say this as a caveat. He hadn't even taken office yet, so maybe he's trying to be conciliatory. Maybe he's trying to bend over and kiss somebody's butt, you know, and trying to make nice. Okay, fine. I'll give him due credit, and I'll...
withhold judgment.
Here's what I'm saying, telling people. Wait till about May, okay? By May of 17, which is what? Just a few months away.
It ain't long.
Don't listen to a word Trump says, and definitely never listen to what the corporate mass media is saying, good, bad, or indifferent. Just wait till May and watch very closely.
I think actions are going to speak far louder than any of the words.
Yeah. Yes. Watch who he appoints. Watch what treaties he goes for. Watch how he backs off Obamacare. He's already starting to back off some. But anyway, then, you know,
Jim, hold on. I think what he wants to do so far with Obamacare is to keep the rule which prevents companies from barring you on pre-existing, which I think is fine.
That's good. That's good.
Yeah.
Yeah, but, you know,
we'll see.
Again,
your point is very well taken. You're on the money.
Yeah, don't get fervently behind him. I just had dinner with my in-laws, and God, I am so lucky. My in-laws were for Trump, which at least shows me they're against the New World Order. So we have peace. Peace prevails in the Mars household.
No food fight at the Mars household.
No food fight on the Turkey Day. No.
You don't have mashed potatoes on your head. Is that what you're saying?
That's right. That's right. But, you know, so, and I told her.
And they didn't use you for the wishbone either.
I say, wait and watch. Watch and wait. Okay? And then we'll know.
No, you're right. You're totally right. Right. Let's see what he does in his first 100 days, then we'll pass judgment. I agree.
I agree. Okay, now I've heard other people say, well, I can't figure out what's going on. Why are the Republicans doing all this? And, oh, by the way, here's my favorite line. The Democrats have not been so upset since the Republicans freed their slaves. That's a great one, isn't it? These Black Lives Matter, how many of those people know that the whole solid South, the Confederacy and the it was Democrats? They're the ones that were holding all the slaves. It was the Republicans that were going along with the abolitionists, free the slaves. This just shows you people, they're all a bunch of idiots. I'm sorry, they don't know history, they don't know anything except what the TV
and we're talking about the younger people who have been put through the dumbing down machine called education here.
Yeah.
And I think, and I mentioned this earlier, I think, honestly, that there is an effort to go beyond dumbing people down to actually deconstructing their intellectual potential that they can't catch up even if they wanted to in most cases. I think they're being rewired.
I agree with you totally. We're being rewired mentally, physically, and emotionally, okay? And it's mostly due to TV, but it's also due to bad food, bad air, bad water, okay?
What else is there?
Well, I don't know, but, that's the title of my latest book is Population Control, How Corporate Owners Are Killing Us. And I don't mean that metaphorically.
They
really want you dead, okay? And they're spraying stuff on you from the sky. They're putting sodium fluoride, which was sold as a rat poison in the 20s and 30s, into your water supply.
Unreal.
They're putting chemicals into your processed food and passing laws that they can't label GMO products and they can't label the truth about the food you're eating. And we sit by while they do that.
It's really hard to believe, but I think that there's a baseline that is being lowered in terms of human proficiency as a species. We're not, and I'm talking about Western society here. Poor these millennials have been adjudged in one survey to be the most useless group of people on the planet.
Well,
now, there are exceptions, plenty of them, but as a group.
But the only light at the end of that tunnel is that when the going gets tough, they're just going to die off. they don't know how to take care of themselves. They don't.
They got to get their hot chocolate and their crying towels and their
safe spaces.
That's it. The spaces
to
be safe.
I'll show you a safe space.
And if you're upset about Mr. Trump, you don't have to go to class or take your finals. Don't worry about it.
Man. And we got free Kleenex for you, so you can cry about it. How did we get to this?
I don't know. That's what I'm talking about, though, when I say they're actually rewiring these people, these young people. They're telling them that that's an okay response to literally regress back to pre-puberty is what they're doing.
Well, I'm just glad I live in Texas where there's still men around, But I was thinking back to, we're talking about the Republic and from 53 to 63, and then we get in the hippie era, and I will say this, at the time I was, what the heck were these people, long hair,
when men cut their hair, it was kind of a ritual. They had to look a certain way. All of a sudden, they're looking like, if you want to go this way, like God created them. They have their natural hair. They have the natural markings. This is who they are. They have long hair. It's long hair.
Well, you know what? Actually, long hair, it probably is the desired thing. In the Bible, Delilah cut Samson's hair, and then he was impotent. He couldn't.
Well, they've proven that hair is a sensory organ. Have you seen that?
They are. It's just like tentacles on other animals, And the Native Americans, they knew this. That's why they all let their hair grow long, so they could be one and perceive the world around them, see? So two things happened, see? Mostly it was the military. The military, first thing you do, shave your head.
That's because you take someone's dignity away, and you strip them down to totally being bare and vulnerable.
Right. And their sensory, some of their key sensory
that's the truth, too.
Out of the way.
That's right.
All right, now they would say and this is probably true too, they would do that so that they would cut down on the lice problem or something, okay? That could be true, but I don't think that's it. But so the hippies, the reason they grew their hair all along, consciously or subconsciously, was as a alternative, a mirror of the, reverse mirror of the guys in the military going around with their heads all shaved and close cropped hair.
Right.
Yeah, and no facial hair. I know when I was in the Army, you couldn't have any facial hair. So, growing a beard and having long hair, that was just the thing. But look how, and but then at least, unlike the millennials, They were smoking dope, and they were having a lot of sex, and they were landing. They had a lot of Volkswagen buses that were swaying back and forth. But that's okay, because in the overall picture, they stopped the Vietnam War.
They didn't sit on their asses. They did something.
They did something. Yeah. That's right. And I want to tell you something. I was in the Army during that time. I was in the Army from, I think, 67 to 70 or something like that. And I honor the people that went to Canada. I really do. That was
I agree with you.
It was a very tough choice, and that was very brave of them to do that. Okay?
You got it, Nate. No, they stood on their principles. That's nothing higher
exactly,
than that.
Exactly. I didn't have the cojones to do that. You know, I just went ahead and went in the Army. So anyway, no. Yeah. You
good point, Jim,
for,
and I think that's correct.
You stand up for what you believe in, and the problem with the millennials is I don't think they believe in anything because they don't know anything.
I think you're right. And I had one of them call the program here a month or so ago, an exception, a really bright young man, smart guy.
And oh, yeah.
He confirmed everything.
Everybody take note. We're speaking in generalities.
That's
okay?
Right. Yeah.
There were, I know people in the 50s. I hung out with beatniks. You know, beatniks were before pre-hippies, okay? And that goes back into the 50s. There's always, you know, people who are a step ahead, people who got their head up. Okay, so we're talking generality. So what did the sharp millennials say? Are you there?
You asking me to speak for the millennials?
Well, no, you said this millennial called in the show.
He said you're right. He said all the people around me said they're idiots. I'm paraphrasing, but basically he said we were correct that they're idiots. They're basically without direction, without purpose. They're floating along. They're being coddled. He basically reflected everything that most of you out there listening understand already, that they've got no purpose on the planet. I saw a couple of them talking a year or two ago, and the one guy says, well, what are you going to do when you're, you know, 28, 29? What do you want to do when you get to be an adult? And he says, I'm probably not going to live that long.
Well,
I said, what the hell kind of drive is that? To succeed.
I know. You know what? Because something tells me this guy looks forward, and he's probably smart in many ways, and he knows that there's always the chance of the comet hitting or the asteroid. also knows that there's a good chance that we could, and now that with nuclear proliferation, all these little crazy states, that we could have a nuclear, holocaust. He knows that, he's watched the zombie movies. He knows that we could be hit by the zombie virus any minute now, and so he just sees no future. Well, let me tell you, folks, I wish I'd get hold of the guy, because I'd tell him this. I grew up in the 50s and the early 60s, becoming a man, and the threat of nuclear annihilation was a week ahead of us the whole time. The Russians were threatening to, launch a nuclear attack. We were threatening to launch a nuclear attack. Everybody, it was close. The Cuban Missile Crisis, man. I was just holding my breath as those Soviet ships headed for the line in the ocean that Kennedy drawn. He said, if you go past that, we're going to attack you.
Yeah.
That's how close it got. It got that close, and I had to grow up under that, okay? Come on. I made it. You don't ever know. You got to assume that everything's going to be okay in the future. In fact, importantly, you got to do something to make sure that
it's
everything's going to be okay.
It's called proactive lifestyle, not reactive. And that's,
exactly. You don't curl up in a ball and cry in your tissue, you know? Be a woman, you know?
I blame the universities and the universities.
I do, and you know why? Because back in the 30s, people who later were investigated by the House Un-American Activities Committee for being communist were somehow or another, bought into socialism, and no, it wasn't somehow or another. That was all. The money that went in was to hire people and to staff the universities with socialists, okay? And so it took a long process. It started in the 30s with people that probably joined the Communist Party back then. And then when that was a no-no, after World War II, when it was us and the Soviets were there, I know nothing about that. I was never there, but they're still there, and they're still there with their philosophy, with their illuminism, okay? We're better than everybody else because we have an education, okay?
Yeah.
And we can decide how we go. And we need is an egalitarian society where everybody's equal and to each according to his need, you know, blah, blah, just spouting Marxism, okay?
Total communism.
Exactly. And then by the 50s and by the 60s, they're pretty much entrenched there. And then they begin turning out, you know, these dumbed down people. And it's just gotten worse and worse. And today we got the millennials. And it's like that's the sum product of
and, you know, you younger, there are some younger people who fit in that group who are listening right now. And you folks wouldn't be listening if you were one of them. So please, we're not talking about you. You know exactly who we're talking about.
Yeah,
no.
Don't take umbrage.
Don't get upset either. Then keep that umbrage.
That's right. Just stay under that umbrage.
That's it. That's
now,
it.
Now, and to those of you, those that Jeff just mentioned, plus everybody else, if you're still trying to figure out what the hell's going on, let me just tell you. Back in the 1700s, a group of very intellectual and educated Germans got together and they began to pour back through history and study the ancient mysteries and study the ancient gods and study the Greek and Roman mythology all the way back to the mystery schools of Egypt to Greece, okay? And they began to put all this together and begin to figure it out. And what they finally decided was, that, and early on, everybody thought this was really great, okay?
Uh-huh.
But then, two things happened. Number one, they got real smart. And I think, by the way, that this happened to the Jesuits, you know, the Roman Church. They were under attack from all sides. And so they decided they needed the SS of the church, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But they made a mistake. They went around and grabbed some of the brightest, most educated clerics in the Catholic Church, put them together and formed the Jesuits. Well, the Jesuits got together and they got real serious about studying and they tried to be scientific and objective and they realized the church was wrong about a whole lot of things. And so they morphed. They morphed into the Illuminati and they morphed into other things and all of a sudden there for a time, in fact it was disbanded at one time. The Jesuits, you know, they sent them away because they got too smart. And a lot of them were in this German group, the Illuminati, the German Order the Illuminati. And from there, they realized that the whole system that was prevalent in Europe at that time, which was kings and queens, the state, and the church, the Catholic Church, which was just predominant, they said, they're all screwed up. They're wrong. This is tyranny, you know? And they started preaching against them, and they formed other little subversive societies and secret societies. And in fact, one of the groups that they had followed and built upon was the Knights Templars.
Mm-hmm.
And the Knights Templars, of course, founded the Stonemason Guilds of England because they were able to travel around through Europe when nobody else could, okay, because they were going from city to city to build the cathedrals to the church. But that was a great form of communication, and it spread their seditious ideas. And pretty soon, you know, the stonemasons just turned into the plain masons, okay, the Freemasons. And there were two branches. There was the speculative and the operative. Operative were the people who actually were stonemasons.
We're going to go through this break. Go ahead.
Okay. All right. And speculative was everybody else, you know. And that was the beginning of the Freemasons. And then this German group, the Illuminati, you know, two things happened. The royalty of Europe, you know, began to say, wait a minute, these guys are dangerous, you know, they're subversive.
Mm-hmm.
They want to break the power of the government, so they want to break the power of the church.
Yeah.
And so the clergy and the governments all got together and outlawed them, okay, and said, no, you can't have that. So they outlawed them, and of course, the Illuminati was not, they didn't wear, you know, a swastika armband or anything like that. I mean, they did later, but what I'm saying is they weren't a cohesive group. They were just people, okay, that would meet. Well, if you're banned, if you're outlawed, then you don't meet, okay? Now you're just people out on the street. So see, the Illuminati as a structured organization was pretty much broken up by the 1780s. But their philosophy, which they had built together from, as I say, all of these threads into history, it remained, and it was, I call it Illuminism, okay? And it was an ism, just like Nazism, communism, socialism.
Oh, yeah, all those isms.
Feminism, you know, all of those isms. And so it was a philosophy. And you could be black, white, Jewish, Christian, didn't matter. If you subscribe to the Illuminati philosophy, then you're Illuminized, and that's what you do. Now, what's wrong with Illuminism? Because they, as their leader, Adam Weishaupt, wrote continually, their basic philosophy was the end justifies the means. So that means, in fact, they... Any means possible. You can pretend to be another race. You can pretend to be another religion. You can pretend to be another political party or political
That's
persuasion.
Right.
You can lie, cheat, steal,
and boy,
kill. You can murder, okay? As long as your end is justified, and you're justified in your end. And surely I don't have to tell people how easy it is for people to justify their ends. Well, you know, I wanted that car, so I stole it. It justifies means. Okay? And now that, this Illuminized philosophy, has then, from 1700s, just tracked right on down. When they were outlawed, they had to go undercover. Well, going undercover, they rolled themselves in at the Willemsburg conference. They rolled themselves in. They had the majority of people there, and they voted in these certain orders, which basically rolled the Illuminati into Freemasonry. Okay, now of course a Mason today is going to tell you, well, that's not true, because they're never taught these things.
Never.
But it is true. And okay, so now they've spread through Freemasonry, and Freemasonry has spread throughout the whole world. And just as an added item of interest, about the 1830s or late 20s, the first third party in the United States was formed, and it was the
Anti-Masonic Party.
Yeah, because they some folks had realized how deeply penetrated the government, the police agencies, the courts were with these Masons.
Now, this is in the 1820s or there, but even before that, that sentiments were growing. People realized that they had been penetrated and overtaken.
Yeah.
By a foreign power. It's called money.
The number of Masonic lodges in the United States, which had numbered in the thousands, went down into the hundreds. They just almost disappeared. And it took them the whole rest of the 19th century and well into the 20th century to regain their membership. Yeah, to recover from this. And again, I'm not trying to say, my dad was a Freemason, so I'm not trying to say that all Freemasons are sinister conspirators. Very far from it. But what I'm saying is, the higher people in Freemasonry have admitted to this, and others don't know that there's an inner circle and an outer circle.
Yes, yes.
And by the way, there's also a vast difference between the Freemasons in Europe, which some of which still have some of these direct ties back to these ancient mysteries, and American Freemasonry, which basically lost it all, okay, because of what I just explained about the Anti-Masonic Party. And so they're more social, and they, of course, have some wonderful charities, the burn centers and hospitals, and so, you know, they're not bad, but within the Freemasonry is an inner circle, and they're carrying on this Illuminism, and they practice service to
humanity,
right? But not to the light bringer. Okay.
No.
And so there's a lot going on at the inner circle of Freemasonry that we don't know about.
That's one of the few things you don't know about.
Right now. The Freemasons imbued with the Illuminati have been admittedly the driving force behind the French Revolution. And a few 10 years before that, they were very active, if not a key factor, in the American Revolution.
Uh-huh.
And that's why early on we have a lot of the symbolism in Freemasonry that we see all around us today, like on the dollar bill, the pyramid with the all
sure.
the eye and the.
Well, they got the hand signals too. Trump's been doing hand signals. I've seen
exactly
that little pyramid thing he does with his hands or triangle.
Well, Somebody put together a collage of Hillary Clinton. And
she's got them. They're all there.
9, 10, 11, 12, 13. Probably about 15 or 20 pics of her. And in every one, she's got her hands down with her fingers curled up in her hand, except her index fingers and her thumbs touching, forming a triangle, you know, a mystical.
That's what Trump was doing.
Exactly.
When he had that meeting with Obama, he did it. I saw him. I watched him. He's making that same thumb and index finger triangle.
That's because they're Illuminati. Okay, not membership. In fact, in my new book,
doesn't that mean when you do that, please don't shoot.
Or something like that. Yeah. It means I'm one of you. You know, take care of me. You know, the lawyers do that in front of the judges so they can get a favorable opinion, you know, if the judge is a member.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, they all stick together, that's for sure. They formed the Illuminati, went on and through the Freemasonries to carry on Illuminism. Illuminism really took hold a lot in England, and that's when Karl Marx got onto it, traveled down to London, formed a outfit called the League of the Just, which then later changed its name to the Communist Party.
See, and that's another ism.
Another ism, communism. And then they went over, and of course they tried to stir up revolution in Russia. There was one about 1902 or something like that, and it didn't work very well. So the leaders had to scatter, and that's why at the time of the second revolution, in right at the end, about 1917, at the end of World War One, Lenin was in Switzerland hiding out, and Trotsky was in New York living on Rockefeller property. And see, here's where you start getting the tie-ins, all right? And what I said in my forthcoming book is that if you took Hillary Clinton and Dick Cheney and searched them thoroughly, you're not going to find a card that Illuminati membership card, okay? Both of those, which most people would say are on the opposite ends of the political spectrum, both of those still practice Illuminism. The end justifies the means.
Always.
Say anything, practice anything, be anything, you know, tell anybody anything, as long as your purposes are furthered, you know? And
that's where sociopathy and psychopathy came from, and that's why it's a key ingredient in any successful politician.
Exactly.
They lie.
Exactly. Now they are basically following the stated desires of Adam Weishaupt, who founded the Illuminati. They want control of the entire world. Okay?
Now,
they want the world. They don't want just England or the United States.
Oh,
they want the whole world. And what they want is world socialism, worldwide socialism. No individual can stand out. Everybody's just a drone. We all just wear the same. You know, 1984, worldwide.
Yeah, that's what it is. Yeah.
And the biggest roadblock to this plan, they've got Europe pretty well under control, and the UK until Brexit. But the largest roadblock to their plans for one world socialism is the United States of America.
It's the last one.
The last bastion. And the reason for that is because three reasons. Number one, we have a history and a heritage of freedom, liberty, and individualism, okay, which I take great pride in.
Yes, sir.
Two, we have a Constitution and a Bill of Rights. It was drawn up, you know, all those years ago.
Greatest document in probably human history.
Only the possible exception of the Magna Carta. Okay, and then third, we got guns. We can still
underestimate. Jim's not making a joke here either.
Making a joke. I want to tell you something. You know, if the tyranny gets too tight, there'll be a fight, and it's going to be a real fight because I'm thinking about here in Texas. I need to go look up the number, but I venture to say there's probably 1 million hunting licenses just in Texas. That means there's 1 million people just in Texas that have guns.
That's a big army.
I want to tell you, living out in rural Texas, I know a bunch of them, and I want to tell you, they don't have just just one gun, okay? I'm telling you. And so if it gets, you know, if it gets to that point, nobody wants that point. I don't want it. Nobody wants it. But if they keep pushing, and if they finally, like, if they try to run in some foreign power or the Union,
oh, the masses, the masses will rise up like they did in France or wherever.
They will kick their ass. They will run them out. They could have 1 million people just in Texas. All right, and then you think of all the hunters in Wyoming and North Dakota.
We got an army of millions.
Illinois, we would have millions.
It's too bad we can't organize now, James. I'd love to see that.
We can't because they own the five corporations that control everything we see and hear, and their whole purpose, their whole design, everything they do is to make us conflicted and break us up, okay?
Exactly. Perfect.
You're right. That's why, but see, this is what worries me about Trump. How does one guy manage to act as a polarization or a lightning rod, you know, for the mass of the people in the United States? Mm-hmm. They're not gonna let somebody get like that. That's why they shot Kennedy. People loved Kennedy. They were listening to him. They somehow realized that he was trying to do stuff in the best interest of the people, not just the corporation, not just the bankers, not just, you know, for the people of this country. And they couldn't stand that.
Trump's walking a fine line, real fine line.
Exactly. But that's why we got to watch him for the first 100 days.
Let me say one thing, Jim. I'm thinking, honestly, if he can get to the point of the inauguration and be sworn in and president, I think we simply have to stay back and watch what he does. We'll know soon enough what it's going to happen.
Right. Exactly.
We'll know.
Exactly, and I want to give him the benefit of the doubt, okay?
We have to.
I'm figuring all this thing. When he's calling the Clintons fine people, wait a minute. You know, at first he says he's going to put her in jail. Then he gets elected and he says, oh, well, actually they're fine people. Maybe we don't want to go that far.
Well, maybe he missed those hundreds of thousands of people at his rallies yelling, lock her up, lock her up.
I know, exactly. And that's what put him in office, and he's already backing up. But then, hey, this is nothing new. Think of George Herbert Walker Bush. Read my lips. No new taxes. One of the first things he did was raise taxes. You know, you can't trust.
Well, and then Junior, I'm not going to persecute the Clintons. No travel gate. No pardon gate. No, we got to go forward. And then what did Obama do? Same thing to Bush. We're not going back to Bush. We're going forward. We got things to do.
Right.
We got to make change.
Well,
so,
that's a key thing to watch on for.
Let's see.
If he starts saying, well, we just need to go forward, let's not look back, we're not going to prosecute him, then he has totally turned his back on the vast majority of his supporters.
I think I have a hunch here that, and I know Hillary would slit his throat in 1 second if she could. She would never say, oh, he's suffered enough, he needs time to heal. No way would she do it unless she was ordered to do it. I think that there's a chance that Ivanka Trump's friendship with Chelsea Clinton is working to the disadvantage of us and the advantage of Hillary Clinton. See,
right.
Chelsea goes to Ivanka and says, oh, my mom's got Parkinson's. You know, she's going to die. And your dad can't prosecute her. It's a terrible thing. And Ivanka goes to her old man and says, look, you know, she's dying. She's got this. And the daughter's chose to see Chelsea's crying. And then I don't know. I think that's a possibility here. Part of it.
Well, if Chelsea has inherited the $1 billion, the political savvy of her mother, you know, and the illuminism, which allows her to genuinely act like anything, you know, I can see where she could get teary and say, please take care of my mom. And, you know, all of us in that situation go, oh, poor girl, maybe we ought to back off, you know.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. We don't know how genuine that is, and I think she's fallen, you know, she could be taken for a ride. That could be an act, you know.
It's hard to say right now. We've got to wait. We have to wait.
Yeah, it's hard to say right now. But, you know, I've been a reporter for 50 years. I run into more than a few just badass criminals. They're just criminal. A lot of people that are arrested, get charged with crimes. They're just poor, dumb people, and they make mistakes, and they get desperate, etc. But I mean, I'm talking about hardened criminals, and those hardened criminals, particularly the white collar ones, they can look you right in the face, smile, tell you exactly what you want to hear, and pick your pocket with the other hand.
Well,
they know how to do that.
That's Hillary Clinton.
And that's Hillary Clinton. And I'm saying if that was inherited by Chelsea, then she could just be putting on this whole thing to accomplish exactly what it looks like she's doing, which is to sway Melania
Ivanka.
To sway Trump. Ivanka to sway Trump.
No reason to think that that isn't happening. And it's certainly a factor. I believe that. They're friends. You got to remember that. So what's she going to tell her friend? Oh, yeah, let's prosecute my mother. No.
No.
I don't think so.
And I want to tell you something. Again, I've met hardened criminals who you could sit there and talk for a while, and pretty soon you think you're old buddies because they're nice and they smile and they tell you good
that's
stuff.
Called,
and, you know,
that's psychopaths.
Exactly. You know, and that somebody like Chelsea has probably been raised up in that environment and probably carefully conditioned to that type of stuff. So you can't go for that. But again, and then you have to understand, now, if it turns out that Trump is just a plant, a straw man. And, you know, if you'll go back and think, you know, first he steps up and he says, I'm going to run for president, and everybody just laughed at him, okay? And then it starts looking like it's getting serious. I think he had maybe like an epiphany or like a conversion, like Paul on the road to Damascus. And he suddenly realized, well, this is getting serious, you know? And I think he was put up to it by some of his wealthy friends who are among these globalists who say, yeah, go ahead, Trump, that'll be fun, you know. And they're all thinking, yeah, he'll get in there. And his mouth, you know, would trip over his, or his feet would trip over his mouth.
Yeah.
He'll say wrong things, and then we'll have laughing stock, and then Hillary will get in a breeze. But then something happened, you know, and again, I think Trump had an epiphany, and then he's going, wait a minute, this is getting serious. I might actually get president. And he said, maybe I can start doing really some good for people, you know.
Yeah.
And then, because he started changing his tune just slightly, I know I'll never forget what he said just a few days before the election in Florida. He said, our campaign is a direct threat to the establishment. Well, whoa, that's what everybody wanted to hear, you know?
Yeah.
And by that time, maybe he thought maybe he was really going to do that, you know?
In the last 3 or 4 weeks, he started saying the things I wish he had said, you know, 6 months ago. But he said them, and he said them just in time. A lot of heavy things, big things.
Because I think he was beginning to realize what he was really stepping into. And when it came to a climax was when he met with Obama. In the past,
usually when
the incoming president meets with the sitting president, you know, they have a nice little polite conversation for about 30 minutes, and that's it. This was an hour and a half. And all you got to do is look at some of the pictures taken and then watch him when he comes out. He kind of looks like the deer in the headlights. And I think they took him in there, probably showed him a copy of the Zapruder film, and then told him about the space aliens, and then said, now, you know, we'll tell you later what to do about all this. And he's just like, wait a minute, you mean I'm not going to be
that's the only logical explanation as to why he came out such a changed man.
Exactly.
He heard a lot. Now, I'm not saying Obama was the only one in there like Jim is either. We think there could have been other. Maybe Dr. Kissinger just happened to be in that room.
Yeah, right. We
don't know.
We don't know. That's why they have closed meeting. Why would they have a closed meeting? You got one president coming in to meet the sitting president. Hey, the whole public ought to be able to listen in on that. You know, unless they've got dirty secrets that they can't allow the people
to hear.
That's what's going on.
Let's see what Wall Street and the Illuminati are going to let him get away with by way of being a they got something to say here about, let's have a popular American hero. Populism is great. Let's let the American people feel like they've got their own way, but we'll still keep running the show.
Exactly. Well, now let me point out, and everybody listen closely, the way the Illuminati, the illumined ones, the people who practice Illuminism, and they can be Republican, they can be Green, they can be Communist, it doesn't matter. They're all answering to the same masters, okay? And their favorite and long-standing tactic is to control both sides, okay? The United States tried this with Fidel Castro in Cuba. We're the ones who armed him, gave him the yacht, Grandma gave him the arms and the ammunitions and the help of the CIA to take over down there at the same time as we were publicly supporting Batista and supplying him with arms and ammunition. The idea being that we don't care who wins, we still control. Okay? Yeah. And that's the way they work it. So, see, if it turns out that Obama backs off of a whole lot of the things he promised, it's going to be because they have got him somehow
Trump.
In a chokehold, okay?
Yeah.
And that they had knew this all along, or they wouldn't have even allowed him to get as far as he did.
That's right.
And so they control both sides. And so, okay, their leftist side, Hillary and her gang of libtards, they lost. But that's all right, because they still control Trump.
Hey, good look, President Kane or President Pence will work just fine for them. They don't care.
That's right. In fact, you know, if I was Trump, I would really keep my eye on Pence, because Pence, if you look at his background, he is pretty much a consummate New World Order guy.
You
okay?
have got it. I don't understand why he picked that man at all.
All I got to do is get rid of Trump, and Pence is in the driver's
seat. One heartbeat away.
Yeah.
And they'll get along just fine with him. They may let Trump, crash around in the China shop for a couple of years.
Right.
And then take him out, and Pence will finish the last 2 years, and they run for re-election.
And don't think that can't happen, because that happened in
63. Oh, it's too easy. Too damn easy.
After Kennedy was killed and Johnson took over, who, by the way, was actually heading for jail also, okay, because of the Bobby Baker scandal and others.
Oh,
that's right. The TFX,
yes.
You know. In fact, let me tell you a story I heard from somebody I consider a knowledgeable source. Life magazine already had a schedule for the week following November the 22nd.
Yeah.
A big expose on Johnson, okay? And enough to put him in jail, really. All right. All his connection to Bobby Baker and Billy Solestis, you know. And then, of course, Kennedy's killed on Friday, November the 22nd, and they had to bring in people and rush to get out a whole new edition the next week that eliminated the Johnson article. Well, we can't do that to the President of the United States. And so, yes, that's already happened. And then later, Johnson, some of his close friends were saying, why did you accept the nomination as vice president, said, when you already had the most powerful position in Washington as head of the Armed Services Committee.
Yeah.
And he said, because it put me one step closer.
Wow.
Okay? His whole illumined goal was to become president. Okay? And, of course, now there's an abundance of evidence. Well, I'll put it this way. I'm not even going to try to say that Lyndon Johnson orchestrated or ordered the Kennedy assassination, but I will say that in Texas and under our legal system, he could be convicted of being an accessory after the fact, okay? And in our legal statutes, in our whole legal system, the accomplice or the accessory after the fact is considered just as guilty as the person that pulled the trigger. So he could be convicted in a court of law as an accessory for covering up the truth of the Kennedy assassination, which means, yes, he's guilty. He was guilty in the Kennedy assassination.
Completely agree. And there were a lot of others who were just as guilty.
That's right. J. Edgar Hoover, Alan Dulles. Yeah.
Well,
right,
remember the program we did with the reverse speech of all those people?
Yes, yes.
That was
dynamite.
Program. Yeah.
And by the way, I'm in a kind of a squeeze here. I don't think I'm supposed to be talking about this, so I'm going to keep it fairly general because I don't want to blow the guy's stuff. But this weekend, I was shown one of the films that was taken of the assassination.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd seen the film before, but it was always cropped and blown up so you could just see Kennedy's car going down Houston and turning left on Elm.
Uh-huh.
But in the uncropped version, you can actually see a figure in an upper window.
The full screen version shows somebody in a window. Uh-huh.
In the county records building, which is the white building catty corner to the Texas School Book Depository. Okay? And then, after Kennedy's turn and going down Elm Street, the camera, whoever's taking this picture, pans back, and you can see a flash.
Boom, wow.
In that window. Okay? And then he keeps filming, goes back to the plaza, then he comes back again, and now there's nobody there. Mm-hmm. Now, to add to this, the evidence of this is some years ago in the late 80s, and I interviewed the guy's son, there was a air conditioner repairman that worked at the, was called in to do something with air conditioning in the county records building, mm-hmm. and he went up on the roof, and up on the roof was a little parapet about, waist high, mm-hmm. but then under it, it didn't just go right into the roof, there was like a little alcove, or a niche, I guess, I don't know what you call it. And he was reached in there and was feeling along to make sure that there wasn't any water leaking because of the air conditioning.
Yeah.
And he found an empty 30-06 shell casing that was heavily weathered on one side, meaning it had laid there for a number of years.
A long time. Okay. How interesting. Yeah.
All right. Now, to add to that, I was on a radio station back in maybe the early 90s or something in Florida with a guy. Uh-huh. And I brought up the idea of a husk or a sabot bullet. Oh, God, we're about out of time. And this is what it is. It's a plastic sleeve mm-hmm. that you could take a bullet. Well, all right, here's what could have happened. You take Oswald's rifle, you fire a 6.5-millimeter bullet into a barrel of water, and you recover the slug. It is practically pristine, just like .399, okay?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then you take the 6.5, and you put the plastic sleeve on it, and you seat it into a 30-06 shell case full of powder, okay, and then you fire that, all right, not only do you are you firing a lesser weight projectile with more power behind it, so it's got really supersonic speed, and that would cause it to explode when it hits something, just like we see in the Zapruder film. But also, the key thing is that any fragments or any of that bullet that's recovered does not match the 30-06 that fired it. It matches the 6.5 millimeter that they said Oswald had. Okay, so after the program, the guy says, "Hang on, I want to talk to you." And afterwards. Uh-oh, there we go.
Go ahead. I'm gone.
Anyway, he said that the head of the Minutemen, the afternoon of the assassination, got a call from one of his members in Dallas and says, "I got something that I think will interest you." And the next day or so, he gets a letter from the guy, and in the letter is the little plastic sleeve. He said, "Where'd you find this?" And the guy said, "In Dealey Plaza." So now I think I always thought there was a shot from the roof of the County Records building, but now if you saw this film, you'd be convinced it came from one of the upper windows. And the only other thing I want to add to that is that I've talked to everybody that was around there, and I've talked to some people that worked in the county records building,
uh-huh.
and they said security people came in and told them to stay away from the windows on the west side and to close all the windows. So, you know, how's that for just setting up a perfect situation for the riflemen to take positions?
Well, there you go. You're going to have to revise Crossfire again.
Well, not really. Just have to add more gunmen.
That's amazing. That would have been four.
Yeah. Well, I tell you what. What I'd have to revise is
quadrangle.
I think I left the impression I might have even said that some of the shots may have come from the Daltex building, which is just to the east of the Skubik Depository. And at a certain angle, figuring the trajectories, that's possible. But now, if this film of the records building is true, then it's absolutely possible that it's about the same elevation and behind.
Got it.
Could account for the back shot.
Yes, that could have been it. Exactly. Wow. All right, well, we'll spend more time on this next time.
Okay.
In the meantime, that was a brilliant dissertation. You have a wonderful day tomorrow with your family. Have fun, Jim.
Yep.
Thanks for everything, and we'll talk soon.
I'll tell you what, though. I'm getting worried about the population right now. You know, last month they lobotomized pumpkins, and this month they're going to stuff bread in the turkey's butt. You know,
I don't know
what's happening with people.
We got to call PETA about that.
Okay.
Thanks, Jim.
Adios, my friend.
See ya. Take care. Mr. Jim Mars. I don't need to say any more than that. All right. I wish you all again a wonderful day tomorrow, a happy Thanksgiving, a warm, a pleasant day in which we can all reflect on the good things we still have left and maybe lie ahead for us. Maybe we're going to get that turnaround that we all hope for. Take care. We'll talk soon.